Okay, we're about ready to start again. If anybody's still hanging outside, time to come in. So we are now reading a few texts about how the cause of suffering is sense gratification. Sense gratification causes suffering. There's another text that's a very interesting one for several reasons. This is one of them. This is from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I want to write it down. 20th chapter. And there's two verses, 27 and 28, that are there together. And they describe, the sort of basic qualifications for practicing devotional service. 11th canto, chapter 20, text 27 and 28. Is Krishna instructing Uddhava? So he's describing this, the beginning stages of devotional service is being described here. He says, Jata Shraddha Matkatasu Nirvina Sarva Karmasu Veda Dukatmakan Kaman. These are, I'm particularly interested in the sentence, Veda Dukatmakan Kaman. We hear our word dukkha in there. Veda dukkha come on. The devotee, first of all, he says, jata shraddha matkatasu, that he has awakened faith, and the faith is there, the shraddha has arisen in the process of glorifying Krishna, the basic process of Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting about Krishna. He has faith in that. And nirvinna sarva karmasu, and is disgusted with all karma, all material activities. And veda dukatmakan kaman, and he knows that all kama, kaman means all kama, all material desires, dukatmakan has as its soul dukkha. You could translated here that all sense gratification leads to suffering. But actually the Sanskrit is stronger, that the Atma, the essence of all sense gratification, is dukkha, is suffering. Devotees should know that. So why, now the question is to understand why this is the case. Well, as we were discussing, we are spirit soul. This is our entry level understanding. I'm not the body, I'm a spirit soul. We're all Hare Krishnas. Are you not the body? Yeah, I'm not the body. But then it's one thing to say, I accept this. It's another thing to experience ourselves as not the body. We find that identification with the material body is not just eradicated by accepting things on the theoretical or mental platform. And that's because the knot or the identification, the connection between ourselves and the material body, is on the deepest level of the psychic. This is called ahankara. That is false ego. There's the mind, manas, and then there's buddhi, and then there's ahankara. It's the most subtle, and it's also the most powerful. And so just because on the mental platform, I believe I'm not the body, that doesn't do anything about the identification of the self with the material body. That's much, much deeper. So what causes this ahankara? And what perpetuates it? Sense gratification. Every time we engage in an activity of sense gratification, our identification of the self with the material body increases. There's no way around it. It's built in. First of all, the ahankara itself is established simply by the desire to enjoy in the world. And then as we enjoy, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And so that is called, that identification of the self with the material body is called in the Bhagavatam, Hridaya Granti, the knot in the heart. And that knot in the heart is described as karmashayan, that is to say, the desire to enjoy in this world. So that is the difficulty. Let's look at the act of sense gratification in a little detail. The Gita is described, we bring our senses into contact with the objects, and there's some feeling of pleasure that ensues. So as far as I can tell, that feeling of pleasure is not yet matured into sense gratification. Because you could take the attitude toward pleasure, that it's just something that happens, like pain happens. And I, as a detached person, I don't become attracted to the pleasure, even if I don't become averse to the pain. I can simply tolerate the pleasure the same way I might tolerate pain. But sense gratification is something else. It's not just bhoga, but we take delight in it. So as far as I can understand what happens in the activity of sense gratification, we feel some pleasure, and then somehow or other, by some mental motion, we put our attention onto that act of pleasure and we take possession of it, so that in some way we think to ourselves, now I'm enjoying, I am the enjoyer. We take delight in the process of enjoying. And we kind of go around and we seize upon that activity and the object. The object we say about ourselves, now I'm enjoying, and the object is, it's mine. And so this way we wrap our consciousness around this experience. And then if you notice what happens next, should you ever encounter this experience, is that we puff up. We feel more real. We feel more substantial. We feel proud. We puff up. We feel now we're really alive. We're really living. We are enjoying. So generally people, when they are in the enjoying mood, not only are they having a good time, but they're rejoicing in their having a good time. There's a little complex thing is going on. And at the basis of that, we have to say, what's the celebration about? Well, ultimately, we are God. I am the enjoyer, and I am the controller. And that's what the puffing up is about. Because there's two ways to observe this false ego. Why have we formed this? Why have we acquired this false personality anyway? Well, in some spiritual tradition, it's just happened. It's just a given. It's just there somehow or other. And we have to get out of the situation. Generally, in those traditions, this condition of identifying yourself with the material body is simply described as ignorance. It's avidya. We also have that straight of thought. It's avidya, huh? It's ignorance. Yeah. But in theistic traditions, there's something more than just ignorance, or there's even something behind the ignorance. It's a turning away from Krishna, or turning away from God. Our true personality, in our case, we think we have a true personality. The spirit soul is a person who has a serving relationship with God and has now decided to become God's competitor. And so there's a broken relationship. And so we embark in this world essentially on our own God project. And Prabhupada has talked about this enough times. So that if we look at sense gratification, every time one does this, not only feels some pleasure, but takes possession of it, thinking, now I'm enjoying, celebrates this possession of the object and the pleasure, and puffs up. That is the act of atheism. Where is Krishna? God. It's just myself and the object. And where's God gone? It disappeared. Now there's just me and the enjoyment. And the world is all those other possible things I can enjoy in due course of time. Is there any limit? No. So this is the problem. That's why on another level, another platform... the false ego is increased. Because, of course, for a devotee, the way a devotee says is that the sense object is Krishna's to enjoy. I'm not going to encroach upon his objects. They're his. And I'm not the enjoyer, but I'm the person to insist Krishna in his enjoyment, and so therefore my senses are engaged in serving Krishna, and the sense objects belong to Krishna. I have no possession. I'm not taking possession of them. That's our method of breaking apart this activity of desiring to enjoy in this world. So if we ask about the false ego and why we are why sense gratification is the problem, it increases our identification of the self with the material body. We have a material body. Basically, it is formed in opposition to Krishna, more or less. Yeah, more. It's formed in opposition to Krishna. Now we're using it for a different purpose. That's the gift of the human form of life. And the desire to enjoy in the world is simultaneously a turning away from Krishna. And then when we enjoy, we reinforce it. And therefore, see, our true identity we're not interested in being the servant of Krishna. I'm interested in being an enjoyer. And so I invest more and more in the material body. My identification with the material body increases. I get riveted further and further into that. And then because of that, I suffer. Because then I will experience whatever is happening to the body that's happening to me. That's why sense gratification is the cause of material desires, are the cause of suffering. That's the scientific account. Huh? We have to say. So we. Yeah, we see that then when we identify with the body and we try to enjoy in that way, of course the body itself undergoes its own suffering, And second of all, the from our point of view, we have this desire is there, that's originally love of God. We invest it in the material world, the material things. It becomes baffled. There isn't in this world any sufficient object for that love. Prabhupada has explained this, the desire to love wants to expand without limit. And it cannot do that in the material world. Because everything that's based on the body, it becomes broken. We establish various relationships in order to enjoy or in order to have love. But in course of time, these relationships all become broken. There's always anxiety because you have to work really hard to keep your little structures together. The tendency is always to things fall apart. And then a very good definition of death that I read once is the ultimate failure to perpetuate relationships. Of course, if we have our relationships on the spiritual platform, then there's no death. And because those relationships are not based on the body goes, the relationships do not, are not broken. So that's why when Prabhupada said, human life is meant for self-realization, and then he added the corollary, not sense gratification. This is Prabhupada's realism. His claim when he was asked, how do you differ from these other gurus that have come? Prabhupada said, we are not bluffing. We are not cheating. Because the cheating is people think that you can have self-realization and spiritual progress and to continue on in sense gratification. Prabhupada didn't say that. So we have to look at these things as inversely proportional. Self-realization and sense gratification. So graphically, you can think of a scale like a pan balance. You still see them around here where you buy bananas, huh? They have the two pans with a bar across, and there's two sides, right? And they're... one goes up and the other goes down, right? Like this. This is what I mean by inverse proportion. So let's let my right hand, we'll call this self-realization, and my left hand, we'll call this sense gratification, right? Like that. So here self-realization is going up. You look at the other side, sense gratification will go down. And everything is fine, but then all of a sudden, if sense gratification starts to go up, look at the other side. You'll see that self-realization goes down. So this is what we mean. They're inversely proportional. This is a spiritual law. This does not happen where they both go up together. See, so it's like this. They're inversely... When people say you can have both, then that's cheating. That's cheating. We have a cheating tendency. We have to say that the tendency is there. When Prabhupada is asked about these yogis and spiritual teachers that come and don't tell people about following regular principles, about giving up sense gratification, how do they attract people? Well, Prabhupada said that it's the cheaters and the cheated. That if you're a cheater, the kind of people that will come to you are also cheaters. Oh, we used to have these guys in our airport in Philadelphia. Our book distributors would meet these fellows who were selling watches to travelers in the airport surreptitiously. They were illegal, but they would sneak around. And it looked like a Rolex watch. Now, they weren't really Rolex watches. They were some cheap copy. But they were offering to travelers these Rolex watches for, you know, $200. Usually they're $2,000 minimum. They're offering these Rolex watches for $200. So naturally a person wonder, well, why are you willing to sell me this expensive watch so cheap? So they would suggest to the buyer, without saying quite directly, that these were in fact stolen watches and they were a necessity to sell them cheap. So they'd buy it. So you see, they were cheaters themselves. There's one famous con artist in America who would run these elaborate schemes to bilk people out of great sums of money. And he was asked, after he was caught, if he ever felt bad about the people he cheated. He says, no, I never cheated an honest man. Because that was always a scheme, somehow or other, appeal to their dishonest tendencies. So this is the Prabhupada said, there's these things, so people get cheated. And they'll say like this. We used to, there was some Swami Lakshmi Devi in the mountains near us, had a yoga camp, and she used to send us her brochures that said, enjoy, but in a spirit of renunciation. So we have to be careful that we are also not cheaters, and that we understand this law of spiritual life. That, and this sometimes if we're not careful in this matter, or not diligent, we'll be trying to do these contradictory things at the same time. Prabhupada described it as trying to light a fire while pouring water on it. And we'll be frustrated and baffled because we'll be doing something in spiritual life for a very long time. We don't seem to be making any progress. What's going on? Well, this is what we have to look at the fact that... So we have to understand this principle. Without any resentment or any envy, why has Krishna set up the world in this way? Because the people have been resentful or envious of the principle that one has to follow the injunctions of the scriptures. But it's just Krishna did not make us come to the material world. It is our choice. We have acquired this false ego. There's no reason to be resentful of it, but we have to take to the process. We have to accept this notion of what our spiritual life really consists of. This is the big dividing line in the world. Between these two kinds of people. Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, what is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So this person, who's called Samyami, one who controls the senses or restrains the senses, for that person, to everybody else is nighttime. In other words, they don't see anything. That's when he's awake, he's conscious. Because they see if there's no sense gratification, what's happening here? What's going on? There's nothing happening. I once had somebody ask me about the regular principles of Krishna consciousness. I explained them to him and he said, what do you do? There's nothing more, huh? So when the devotee is that consciousness in which he's alert, everyone else is asleep. They don't see anything there. And conversely, when everybody else is alert and active, the one who sees doesn't see anything there. Well, Prabhupada, in describing this, there are two classes of intelligent men. Now he's talking about buddhi, the intelligent people, the direction of your whole attention. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification. So this is the aim of life. They don't understand anything about self-realization. It's incomprehensible to them. And the other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. So the people, once one becomes absorbed in sense gratification, it kills or destroys or paralyzes the ability for spiritual experience. That is why, for modern people, the idea of the soul, the idea of God, they have no reality in experience for them. They're completely blocked out. A spiritual science, that word, that term, spiritual science, to them seems like a contradiction in terms. It's an oxymoron. They simply cannot see, because the capacity for self-realization and God-realization has been completely paralyzed, disabled. And when one begins the path of self-realization, and as a result of increase in that, sense gratification goes down, then we regain our capacity for relationship with Krishna and for direct experience of the divine. Krishna goes on in the Bhagavad Gita, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, not the man who strives to satisfy such the desires. You wonder why there's no peace in the world. Because people are always trying to become satisfied by satisfying their material desires, gratifying their material desires. There's no peace. There's no end to it. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, that is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. That's the conclusion of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So this is the second basic principle of spiritual life, that the cause of suffering is desire or material desires. Any questions or any doubts about that? Yeah.
Which one is the place of suffering?
Huh?
Which one is the place of suffering? The necessity of suffering. As you say, self-gratification and self-realization.
What are the sense gratification is the cause of the suffering.
Where is going?
Which one?
When is going suffering?
When is it going away?
Where is it situated?
It's situated in sense gratification. When there's self-realization, suffering goes away. It may look like suffering at first, sometimes. Krishna talks about this. He said there's some happiness in the beginning is like poison, but the end is like nectar. So sometimes it looks like self-realization is suffering. We call it tapas or tapasya. That's only a temporary thing, because actual happiness comes from when there's real happiness. It's on the spiritual platform. When we experience spiritual happiness, the first thing we realize is that what I thought was happiness based on sense gratification was not the real thing. It is only imitation. It is not real. It is not substantial. We do not even know what real happiness is. And of course, the other thing is when the taste of spiritual happiness is there, then automatically the attraction for sense gratification goes away. This happens in the course of time. Because otherwise, if you don't have any spiritual taste, then it will be very difficult. Of course, this is clearly also stated in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Because the knot means that is what ties the spirit soul to the material body. It's the link that makes us acquire the possession of the material body as ourselves. So it's called a knot. Paramashayam, this false ego. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Yeah. Yeah, they also had spiritual bodies.
All their friends.
Yeah, they descended with him, also in spiritual bodies. And also, in advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, this material body, which is used fully in Krishna's service, is no longer an obstacle. Prabhupada described it like a gold-plated box. It's not exactly a spiritual body, but a spiritualized material body. Gold-plated means that for all practical purposes, as good as a spiritual body. So we can change it, at least in the human form of life. Yeah, you had a question?
Yeah. We haven't been talking about this specifically, but it has to do with the body, the materialized body, and self-realization, and the question is about love as a man and a woman, and sex, and the connection between the both, and the difference between the both.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not exactly a question. If you could develop that, I mean, I think there is a big difference between the two, but they connect when it comes to love between a man and a woman. Sex takes on a different form. And it's not the bodies anymore. It's something else.
Sometimes that claim is made. It's not the bodies, but you eliminate the bodies, it becomes a little problematical, you know. I think even though it seems more than the body, it seems the body is a necessary part of it, unfortunately. Sometimes there's this bewildering aspect, and people think like this, you know, every time they have love songs, they say things like, our love will last forever, I'll love you to the end of time, and so on. But that's all delusive. It doesn't last forever, and people don't love each other to the end of time. So it's sometimes a convincing imitation of the real thing. But the thing about sex is probably in that activity. The enjoyment is so intense and involving that, well, Sigmund Freud called sex the prototype of all pleasure. It's the standard by which we measure everything else by. So you hear this expression in America, oh, that one, it was better than sex. And of course they're lying. So that's always been the standard of sense gratification, is sex. And of course, Buddha is supposed to have said that if human beings had one more desire like sex desire, there'd be no hope. So it's definitely the very, very strong point of material attachment, and is usually the most difficult for people to give up, not only in its gross forms, but the subtle forms of sex desire there also. So we'll talk about that. We'll address that very important issue. Now, ultimately, we have to say that by definition, we say that actual love is for Krishna and in connection with Krishna. And what you see here in the material world is a reflection of that. Because things are in the material world are a reflection, they look real, although they aren't. And when you see the original, then you can understand that this was just a pale imitation of what's really there. Certainly because there's sex here, there's sex there. Everything comes from Krishna. So the original sex life is there between Radha and Krishna. That's there in divinity. But we cannot get into a position to participate in that until we are free from the attachment to what's here. You cannot have both at the same time. Again, it's an inverse proportion. No, sense gratification means you may or may not have opulent material surroundings. The question is how you relate to those surroundings. So people who have been great Vaishnava kings, for example, have been in the royal position, but never have thought to be the enjoyer of those things. So Krishna tends that if you'll become entrapped by them, he takes them away. There's a whole question about why the Shaivites rich and the Vaishnavas poor. Since Vishnu is the husband of the goddess of fortune and Shiva is an ascetic who lives under a tree, why is it? And the answer is that Krishna will not give facility to a devotee if it will cause them harm. So if one is actually detached, opulent material circumstances will not be a distraction, not be tempted to enjoy. We have seen in our movement a number of times where devotees, as a result of their devotional service, have gotten material opulence, and then they become attached to them, and then it's harmed them. So one should be very careful. It's the idea of devotees are supposed to accept those things which come of their own accord. It also destroys devotional service to strive after these things unnecessarily. A devotee should think that I will take care of Krishna. I'll dedicate to my time to see that Krishna is satisfied. And as for my future and my well-being, I'm Krishna's property. I'll let him take care of me as he likes. I won't worry about my future. Krishna will take care of my future for me. This should be the basic attitude of a devotee. And then whatever comes, they accept. As far as the other question, how much sense gratification can we have? That's answered in the Bhagavatam. Enough to be healthy. To keep the body and soul together in a healthy condition, that's what you need. Again, that may be different for different amounts of different people, but generally a devotee will not want to spend time unnecessarily, if anything, from devotional service. Yeah, one last question, then we should go on. What did you say has become more difficult? Things change for the worse. Yeah, that's called entropy. Things fall apart. Why is that? It's called kala, or time. Time is, I had a course in philosophy about time once, and they defined time as the direction of entropy. Entropy is the tendency of material nature to go from more organized to less organized states. And so time is entropy, or time is destruction. And so the nature of time is things fall apart. That's why Krishna has to come, and Krishna establishes the process of Dharma. And in course of time, it falls apart. He has to come again and again. So that is just the nature of time in the material world. It works that way. And so we have to... That's what maintenance means. Maintenance means to keep things as they are. You have to do something, because otherwise things don't stay the same way they are. They fall apart. You just leave this building alone. You watch what happens. Even if nobody goes near it, somehow or other, it'll become less organized. Plaster will fall down. Somehow things will start to crumble. That's just the nature of time.